Hi, I'm Femi OK. Mass shootings around the US this month has got pro-gun rights and pro-gun reform campaigners debating each other again. But what is different this time around is the significant growth in the number of gun owners in the US since the COVID pandemic began. What difference will that make in terms of Americans' attitudes towards gun reform? That is our show today. We get our show started with the founder of Black Guns Matter.
Yes, I am a gun owner. This misconception that there's an extreme concern about rising violence in America, I think the first stop is to acknowledge that misnomer. Based on FBI statistics, violent crime in America has been on the decline for the last 20 years. Now, because it's a serious issue on mainstream media and it's impacted the lives of Americans, I understand the concern. We combat that concern by education, conflict resolution, de-escalation, while preserving the human right to self-defense. That is the best way to combat the concerns while respecting individual rights and liberties.
Do you agree? The debate has already started right here, right now. If you're on YouTube, be part of the comments section right here. Put your thoughts, your comments, your questions for our panel, and I will do my best to bring them into today's show. Let's meet the panel. Hello to you, Jennifer and David and Philip. Good to have all three of you on board in this discussion. Jennifer, please introduce yourself to our global audience.
My name is Jennifer Massia. I'm a news writer at The Trace. We are a digital news site that is America's only news outlet covering gun violence exclusively.
Good to have you. Hello, David. Please say hello to the stream audience around the world.
Hello, my name is David Muhammad. I am the executive director of the National Institute for Criminal Justice Reform, and we work on issues around the United States of reducing the size of the criminal justice system as well as reducing gun violence.
And Philip, nice to have you in the conversation. Please introduce yourself.
Great to be here. My name is Philip Smith, national president and founder of the National African-American Gun Association.
So, David, Philip, Jennifer, there has been a huge uptick in the number of gun owners since 2020. March 2020, to be precise. I'm going to bring in here John Roman. He is a senior fellow at the NORC at the University of Chicago. He's going to put what that uptick means in terms of the stats and how many more gun owners are in the US right now, and maybe what that impact might be. Here he is.
Americans bought an extraordinary number of guns during the pandemic, more than 40 million in 2020 and 2021. We conducted a nationally representative poll to see if those pandemic buyers were different from other gun owners. We found that one in five American households bought a gun during the pandemic, and 5% of households bought a gun for the first time. Among those who bought for the first time, they were significantly younger and significantly more likely to be people of color than long-term gun owners. The difference and change in this demographic of gun owners potentially will have profound implications for American gun policy in the future.
So, Philip, while I was thinking about finding toilet paper, some Americans were buying guns. Can you explain that for me?
Sure. There is a change in the sea of America. Americans are buying guns, particularly African Americans. COVID was the change that really had our community saying, you know, for the first time, we need to get a gun. And we estimated over 3 million black folks purchased guns during this time. And that is a huge uptick. And to your point about younger folks, a lot of those folks were younger. They are no longer listening to the past narratives that have been placed out there in terms of a gun is a bad thing for black folks. We are dismissing that. We're looking at guns as something that has a value add to our family. We need to protect ourselves, our family, our loved ones. And we think that's a very good thing to law-abiding citizens here in the United States.
David.
So I think, you know, obviously, I think some of the amazement internationally about the United States and this issue could be understood as, you know, this country since its founding has had an obsession with guns and gun ownership and gun rights. And obviously, we are a very, very different country than when the Constitution was written or the Bill of Rights was passed. That being said, I think that simple and common sense gun safety is supported by most gun owners, right? Universal background checks, limiting the size of magazines, not having these weapons that are unnecessary for hunting or for even self-protection that have semi-automatic or fully automatic weapons. And so those are just common sense protections that the vast majority of gun owners agree with. I actually like the idea of a Black Gun Owners Association, a Black Gun Owners Group. You know, I know in California, there used to be a open carry law. And then Black people went to the state capitol with guns and Republicans quickly changed the law. And so
is this the key to gun reform, David? Did you just come up with it just right there? All right. Let me just bring in Jennifer. Jennifer, good to have you in the conversation. I'm just looking at here some a Gallup poll. And it asked from the 1990s all the way through to 2020. So we'll start a little bit later on that timeline. Should gun laws be more strict than they are now? 2018, 2017, 2019, a little bit of a peak there for more enthusiasm. But mostly about 50% of Americans think stricter gun law rules are a good idea. The 50%, other 50% don't. Jennifer, what does that mean in society?
Well, it's always been the majority of Americans support, you know, relatively strict compared to what we have now, gun laws. But the pandemic did change a lot. You know, we've never had in this country flirted with the possibility of social breakdown at a time when gun laws were very relaxed, probably more relaxed than at any time in our history. And we also have 400 million guns in circulation. So this is a gun culture for about half the country has been normalized to a degree that it wasn't, you know, 30, 40 years ago. We saw similar rises in gun buying after 9/11, after mass shootings, because for better or worse, Americans' idea of safety is tied up with guns, gun ownership, being able to protect yourself and your family. That's conservatives, liberals. I think that's almost a universal now. And even if people don't own one, they want to have the option just in case. So when the pandemic hit, it kind of made people question their idea of safety. And am I safe just in case the worst happens?
Jennifer, do you have a gun?
I don't. I live in New York City. It is very difficult to get a gun here. You have to go through about 8 months of interviews with the New York City Police Department. You have to pay a several $100 application fee. This is probably the strictest place to get a gun in the country. But if I lived in Florida, for instance, I personally would not carry a concealed gun. I feel that in my purse, it would probably go off. It is a grave responsibility carrying a deadly weapon every day. Mm-hmm. And unless I was 100% sure that it would not go off accidentally, I wouldn't feel comfortable carrying one around. But that's just me.
Philip, what firearms do you have at home? Philip, do you have a gun?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Do you have a gun?
Yes. I didn't quite hear the question. Sorry about that. Yeah. Yes, I have several firearms. I have pistols. I have AK-47. I have an AR-15. I'm a responsible gun owner. I'm an advocate for the Second Amendment and constitutional carry. I believe, and this is just a philosophical difference, I believe at the end of the day, Americans are safer with a gun in the house. If someone's breaking into your house at 2 o'clock in the morning, you don't have time to call the police. You don't have time to say, hold on, Mr. Robert, hold on 1 second. Let me call the police and just stay right there. We're going to get you in just a second. It doesn't happen that way. It happens in a matter of seconds, and you need to have something that can protect yourself, your family, and your loved ones. And I want to add, a gun doesn't guarantee anything, but it gives you at least a fighting chance. I can't tell you how many women have called me and men over the last 6 years when I started the organization and said, Philip, thank you. I was raped. I went to your organization. I've been trained. I can now at least have a better self-esteem, and I feel better about being able to protect ourselves. Guns are like any other tool. If you learn how to use that tool, you'll be very, very comfortable in the tool. And I listened to the young lady who said, you know, she wouldn't feel comfortable. Of course she would, because she's not trained. But once you're trained, as with our organization, you do get a level of security and comfort. And I don't mean to demonize anyone, but we need to have this conversation. We need to have a really deep dive on why people purchase guns. And people purchase guns because they want to feel safe. So I don't care what color you are, black, white, brown, or yellow.
So, David, this is a classic gun rights debate that Philip just summed up there just in a minute or two. Your response, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I support responsible gun ownership in a way that's safe, in a way that is also regulated, right? I need a license to drive a car. That makes sense. I also need to have insurance, right? So there are just basic regulations that folks agree with. Most gun owners actually agree with universal background checks, for instance. I think we go further down the line and we have some nuanced debate, including limiting the size of magazine capacity. And I think there's a question around the need for assault rifles. But what I certainly support is responsible ownership and training and promoting responsible gun ownership. That is critical. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, we do have to look at the data in terms of the numbers of children who get into their parents' or guardians' guns and have horrible incidents, the number of times that people with guns are shot.
Gun violence
by itself isn't it.
Sure. And I'm just looking at here at the Gun Violence Archive 2022. Gun violence deaths have gone up in the same way, just mirroring the number of gun owners in the U.S. have gone up. David, you were at the White House just recently with President Biden, and there were new gun reforms policy put into place, announced. One of them was for something called a ghost gun, which is basically a gun kit that you can put together that you can't necessarily identify. Let me just check here. Philip, did I describe that correctly? As a non-gun owner?
Yes, All right, very good. You put it together at home, and it's for your own personal use.
You put it together at home, and there's nothing for the police to be able to identify it. So anyone can put this gun together. So that's a ghost gun, and President Biden announced that there would be more restrictions about these ghost guns. You can't just order one up. This is what he was talking about when he was talking about gun reforms on April the 11th. Have a listen.
The NRA called this rule I'm about to announce extreme. Extreme. But let me ask you, is it extreme to protect police officers, extreme to protect our children, extreme to keep guns out of the hands of people who couldn't even pass a background check? Look, the idea that someone on a terrorist list could purchase one of these guns is extreme. It isn't extreme, just basic common sense.
Can I say something? I just got to jump in. I can't take it. First of all, in this country, anyone that buys a gun legally, and I'm going to stress legally, you have to go through a background check. That's something that is ingrained in every state in the union. But what it doesn't state is that criminals, they're going to buy guns always illegally. They're never going to go through a background check because you know why? They can't pass one. So when you have someone making statements that are emboldening his base, and I'm trying to get into the left or right thing, but when you're talking about how to really protect folks, let's be real. When somebody is at home buying and putting together a gun, a law-abiding citizen, that's not the person to go after. If you wanted to stop crime, go after those folks that are committing the crimes, not the good folks that are at home just trying to protect their families and they're trying to build guns to make them safer.
All right, so Philip, David was there. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. Unfortunately, where you're wrong here is the very announcement, right? This is about ghost guns, where you don't have to go through a background check. You get a kit at home, you put it together, and there's a growing number of ghost guns being found at crime scenes. And, you know, I had the pleasure and honor of being at the Rose Garden for this announcement. I think President Biden made a good point. Like, if you go to IKEA and buy a couch in pieces and bring it home and put it together, that's a couch, right? And just because you do that for a gun, you don't have the same regulations for ghost guns. And so this was closing a loop, and for the gun lobby to call a closing a simple loop extreme is ridiculous, quite honestly. And, you know, I actually am fine with responsible gun ownership. But to go to these extremes of the gun lobby that is against most gun owners, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, particularly when we don't have the ability to trace these weapons and the ballistics that you can. Law enforcement are across the board for these type of common sense gun safety rules. And this one is obvious. The ghost guns that you can't trace that are winding up in more and more crime scenes are a huge problem.
Jennifer, go ahead. Let me just create a little bit of space for Jennifer, then you come back in, Philip. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, if I may also, you know, that also, you know, why burden legal gun owners? You know, there are people who pass background checks and commit crimes, like the Brooklyn subway shooter. He passed a background check at a pawn shop in Ohio in 2011. So this idea that criminals will always find a way to get guns, there are people with concealed carry permits who commit crimes. There are people who, you know, most gun violence in America is interpersonal violence, domestic violence, result of arguments, people who know each other. Some of those guns are legally owned. So you can't exactly presume only criminals will be using these illegal guns. You know, that's not how it goes here.
Let me just push on a little bit, because we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. And I hear the different perspectives you bring to this debate. So I hear that, and I'm going to push on. I want to bring in Amani Lindsay. He is a gun owner. He also posts on YouTube as well. And this is what he has to say. I think it's really important also to bring in African-American gun owners, which is a growing number of gun owners since 2019. This is Amani's perspective. Let's have a listen and then bounce off of him.
How has the pandemic changed the perception of firearms in America? It has actually been very vital that Black people in America see that the government isn't here to save us and they won't be on time to save us, that it is on us to defend our own lives and protect our own families. And so a firearm is a meaningful tool that can help one actually achieve those goals. What I think is needed to stop the growing kind of gun violence in America, I think we really do need to invest in our communities. Our underserved communities especially. So the South Side of Chicago, we need to give those youth there an alternative to banking and give them an alternative to wealth creation. And I believe when you begin to do that, then you begin to see a shift within our culture away from firearms, robbery, crime.
2 points I hear there. The first point I hear, which is really echoing what you said, Philip, is that who else is going to protect us? We need to protect ourselves. Second right. point is about community, working within the community so that there's less opportunity for there to be gun violence if it's coming from community or different areas. That's the second point. David, deal with the second point, first of all.
Yeah, well, first, I don't disagree with anything in that clip at all, right?
Right.
And so I think that very quickly on common sense gun ownership, responsible gun ownership with safety rules and regulations makes sense. The other thing that I completely agree with is if we got rid of every new gun coming into circulation today, it would have little to no impact on gun violence in our community for several years. It would be good and we would, you know, could reduce what we're seeing. But more urgently right now, we need intensive community interventions, more investment in our communities. I completely agree with that. What we need to do to reduce gun violence in the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months almost has nothing to do with gun regulation, to be honest. It is around intensive intervention with folks at the highest risk of gun violence, more investment and support in communities hardest hit by concentrated poverty and low quality education and high rates of crime and violence. That needs to have a lot more focus. And that was the reason why I was at the White House last week.
Yeah, I hear that. Philip, I'm just wondering, is there any kind of gun reform that you subscribe to? Or do you think there's enough? There's been enough. Leave us gun owners alone in the U.S.
I think, first I want to say, I agree with David just touched upon on looking at those young kids, typically in the ghetto. Like, I come from a place in Northern California, the Vallejo, south side of Vallejo, which is very poor. And we have areas like that all across the country, south side of Chicago, south side of L.A., out here in Atlanta where I'm at, is southwest Atlanta. There's common features in all those areas. And I think for the most part, And I think that my panel friends have a very good heart. They're trying to do the right thing. But too often, when something happens in terms of gun violence, we automatically turn to the people that own guns and say, okay, what can we take away from them? How can we be more restrictive on them? And these are the good guys. I consider myself one of the good guys. What we need to look at is, why are these young folks in these areas across the country shooting themselves? Why are they robbing folks? Why are they selling drugs? I'll tell you why. Opportunity and lack of opportunity. If we're really serious about solving this issue, and I mean serious, and I agree with some of the things that David said and Jennifer, let's look at not the symptom, but the disease. And the disease are schools that are inadequate, confrontational relationship with the police at best. And here's the killer. They have no viable skills that can be interjected into the mainframe of society when they get out of high school. Because you know why? They're illiterate. They cannot function. And they typically have two or three felonies by the time they're 20 and 21. So now you have a young man or young woman, and women are increasing number in the criminal justice system, that have no way of getting back into main society except selling drugs.
So, Philip, do you think happens in other countries where young people also may not have opportunities, but they also don't have access to guns?
I can't speak to other countries per se. I traveled a lot. I've had a chance to go to Africa as well as Latin America. And I see, poverty. I see folks doing really well. America has the best opportunities, I think, to make it from the ground up. The infrastructure is there, at least at this point in our history.
All right,
look at things a little differently.
All right, let me share some of this conversation with Jennifer. Jennifer, we've got lots of chatter on YouTube, and I want to share some of these thoughts with you, just to see what you think about them. Ness says, I'm so happy that I live in a country that allows you to defend yourself and your family. And then Luke says that you cannot take away people's guns in America. Stop fooling yourselves. Those comments are very common comments. I've been doing this show for a really long time. That could be any show, any year, any time about gun control in America. Your thoughts. What is new? We said at the beginning of this show, the pandemic was new. More gun ownership was new. Is it, though?
Guns are very intrinsic to the American identity. It's not for nothing that the Second Amendment enshrined in the Constitution, that is something that other countries don't have. And Americans are very proud of that. They feel that, it helped liberate us from England. But now we have a situation where, the guns are being turned on each other. Nobody is trying to take away Americans' guns. ATF agents over the years have said, I don't know how people think that we even the federal government has the kind of manpower to go door to door. That is absolutely not what gun reform advocates are arguing for. What they're arguing for is more vetting at the source, at point of sale. As it is, background checks, according to federal law, only cover about 78% of gun sales. Private gun sales are legal. I think a lot of people in America, as well as other countries, would be surprised to learn how little gun regulation we do have in this country.
I want to end with one last thought here, guest, because I feel like it's something that we've all talked around and we've all landed on an area of agreement, which is what the response should be, partly. So this is Robert J. Spitzer, Professor of Political Science at SUNY Cortland. Here he is.
The pandemic has been the cause in the rise in gun violence and in gun purchases in America, and for three primary reasons. One, an increase in economic insecurity. Second, an increase in domestic stress and strife. And third, the freezing of government-funded anti-violence programs. The result has been as depressing as it is predictable, which is a rise in violent crime and homicide, gun homicide specifically. And you can compare that to nonviolent crimes, which have remained steady during this period of time. The best short-term response is to ratchet up anti-violence programs, and the government is starting to do that now.
Depressing and predictable, two descriptive words for often what we talk about and talk around when we're talking about the gun rights and also gun control. Jennifer, David, Philip, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us as we look at gun control, gun reform, gun rights in the US during a pandemic. Appreciate you. Thanks very much. See you next time.